Sadness and Envy, the Rampancy.net podcast. I'm Narcogen, the webmaster of Rampancy.net, and I'm here with Black Star of Black Star Productions and Miguel Chavez of Bungie Sightings. And this is the extended version of episode 18, talking about the reveal of firefight mode in Reach.
All right, so shall we try this, gentlemen?
I don't see why not.
Because they haven't touched on Forge. Maybe a fun assumption is that this might be something that will be handed off to 343 for whatever they're going to do later. I mean, if anything, this is showing how open-ended they're willing to make the game. And so there's all this talk about what's next after Bungie leaves Halo, and maybe this is a possibility. I'm taking your stuff about Forge 2 not being like announced with all these because of all these. So I mean, like all that. Well, what that means that to me is that they didn't have time to make it so that Forge is this kick-ass thing. So maybe that's something that 343 could pick up and finish, and maybe that would be the next chapter is in milking the Halo franchise.
The real problem with Forge is actually Bungie documenting his tools, and the only people who can document Bungie's tools are Bungie. So 343 hiring new developers probably wouldn't be able to do that. They'd have to hire people from Bungie, and where other than Frankie, we haven't really seen that happen. I tend to think that there may be an agreement that, you know, that they can't do that. You know, that Microsoft kept the Halo intellectual property, and they open up 343 Industries to run the Halo franchise, but they're probably prohibited from poaching Bungie employees, which would be the most logical thing to do if they wanted to extend just the engine instead of just the IP. I mean, I'm sure they'll get the engine if that's what they want. But in terms of extending, you know, side functionality like Forge, I tend to wonder if that wouldn't really be a priority. I don't know.
So what would you see then as the future of 343 vis-a-vis
to think they're going to start doing things that are more in the lines of Halo Wars. In other words, they'll be taking the IP and they'll be putting it into other genres. And
so in other words, really killing off the Halo franchise.
Yeah, sure.
Like completely and utterly.
Yeah, it's true. Halo Ping Pong and Halo Kart and
right.
You know, Halo Brothers.
I want to see
Smash
that
Melee and they'll Nintendoize.
I want to see the Spartans with the big bouncy breasts as they smack volleyballs.
Ooh. Oh, I like that idea. We'd have Cortana bowling,
right.
And we can have, you know, recipes with Johnson. And the Master Chief's cooking hour.
I really figured it would be like what they did as a rehash of what they did with Marathon, or maybe Myth actually is a better. When they gave the IP to, you know, whoever, they had, they were able to look at the code and build from it. And yeah, they had new people, but they were, I guess, those new people were smart enough to at least get somewhere with it, and.
Right, but the
Infinity
engine is almost exactly the same as the Marathon 2 engine. I mean, most of the improvements were between Marathon 1 and 2. I think a logical thing for 343 to do is to take the Reach engine and build new scenarios for it with the information they have about the Halo franchise. Build a new setting and new characters and have a new story. I just tend to think that one of the amazing things about Bungie is that they're willing to pour so much effort into things like Firefight and Forge and custom games, even if the game would have sold just as well without it, and even if a large number of the users are not going to be focusing on that, it's not going to make or break the purchase decision for them. I think all the way up through to the latest Halo game, most people would be perfectly happy if it was just the campaign plus matchmaking. And, film recording, there are segments of the fan base that are really, really happy to have that. But there are plenty of people, I think, who, you know, don't know about it, don't use it, and wouldn't have not bought the game if it didn't have it. So I guess I don't see 343 focusing on extending those cutting edge, really difficult to do things that are of interest to a small segment of the population, when, you know, just having another new matchmaking game with a decent campaign would sell just as well.
But the only reason why I'm trying to think, just like, maybe not 343, but like Microsoft, and see how they can keep this SKU like alive or as long as it can be alive and keep the price up. And so I would think that having this game with add-on packs, let's say.
Yeah, the important thing is to push out new SKUs, not to keep somebody using one SKU. I mean, you could make an infinitely flexible game with Forge, where you could give somebody all the tools they would ever need to be happy for 10 years, and that would be a complete failure because there wouldn't be anything to sell them, unless you want to have a Forge store, right, where you have to buy the items, using Microsoft.
That's what I'm kind of saying.
Oh, right, so you're gonna have a Forge budget that's made out of Microsoft points.
Well, yeah, and but even that is too elaborate. I'm just saying, you want something where, like, let's think back, in terms of the Halo history, in terms of its sales. Like, the reason why Halo, the first Halo, didn't go to platinum for the longest time was because it had a steady stream of buyers.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, so they didn't have to put it in the discount bin, like, right away. As all the other Halo, the Xbox launch titles because it actually had a longevity. Right,
but it had longevity because of the campaign and because of
it was unique. It had a very strong pull for new, like, gamers to come. You know, people the game had a massive impact, as much as the naysayers may say was a rehash or whatnot. So to me, keeping Reach viable, the easiest way to keep Reach viable is to have like a full-on Forge kind of, you know, build more things into it, you know, push the camp, you know, add on multi-packs.
But most people never use those.
I'm not talking about most people. What I'm trying to say is that, let's say there are the few creative folks out there who do make something with it. Then what would be what's the one thing Bungie never did? They never would take those people's maps and repackage it and sell it and say, here they are, fully supported by us, thrown into matchmaking. But that's not something which I could see Microsoft saying no to. I could see them very easily saying, no, this is great. And it reminds me of those other games where, of course, now all the names escape me. But what's that classic game that folks then turned into an army game and everyone was playing it over and became even more popular than the actual original game?
Half-Life and Counter-Strike?
Yes, right. So there you have something where, you know, something surpassed the initial game, but it still kept product moving. And it was the easiest.
But wasn't that because of the third-party people out there all doing their own thing in the community?
Right. And then they say, okay, come on, we're going to include it in the 6-month update to whatever people, you know, people still are buying the game. And that to me is the easiest way to keep things going. For someone to actually have to wait a year or a year and a half to wait for a new campaign for new multiplayer, I think is going to be something that's not on Microsoft's to-do list. I see them more as like,
But there's a really easy and traditional way to do that, which is just they will farm out to multiple development teams, and they will have, if each team takes 3 years to make one Halo campaign, they will have three teams working at the time, and each one will come out, just like what they do with Call of Duty, right? Call of Duty was produced by two teams, not one, so that every 18 months you could have a new Call of Duty game.
All right.
I tend to think they'll go for a safer, more traditional route. The route that you're talking about is really compelling, but it is fraught with pitfalls. Like, Are you going to take things that people create and sell them? Do you need their permission? Do you need to pay them a percentage?
Sure.
Is it going to be like, you know, like the App Store for the iPhone and that kind of stuff, where they keep a percentage and they pay you a percentage?
I don't think it's no different than the myth. What was it? The Codex, the Total Codex pack, where it had built in a bunch of fan favorites. Of, you know, like a whole CD full of fan favorites of certain maps.
I think there were many things that happened behind the scenes of the production of the Codex that Microsoft would want to avoid if they knew about them, and I tend to think they do.
Well, I know that behind the scenes for the Codex was that people were just promised every single game Bungie ever made ever after, and that was enough.
Yep.
Yeah, and that was enough after that to make them sign on the dotted line. Whether that's going to be different now with people seeing Microsoft.
I don't think that would fly again.
Right, right. No,
especially
with the incremental
increase in the amount of work necessary to make a game or even an expansion or a mod in these engines with high-def assets. Even if I think you were just reusing the assets, it's still more work than it was for Myth or for Marathon.
I don't know. I think the allure of having your name attached to one of the biggest selling franchises is going to make you quite pliable.
Maybe, but I also see there being a huge objection because it's just going to be like what you do with Halo 3, where you can put your stuff up and it can be put on Bungie favorites, except now Microsoft will be making money off it. And I think there'll be a lot of people just objecting to that on principle. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the overlap is going to be with the people who are most likely to use that will be the people most likely to object. And then there'll be questions of, well, you know, will people have the option of putting stuff up for free? Will it be the creator's decision or will it be Microsoft's decision? What are the tax implications? What are the legal implications? Does somebody, you know, will it be like the App Store where you have to buy a development kit, where you have to pay a fee, you have to sign a? I mean, will Microsoft do this without signing an agreement? I don't know.
No, yeah. Of course not. Of course they're gonna want them to sign over, you know, some sort of contract or whatever. Just like whenever I get interviewed by Bungie, I have to sign something.
Yeah, you know? Your soul. So anyway, as far as the videos that we're gonna do now, do you want to jump in and do the Halo Reach bit for E3?
Well, I don't know. Actually, there was lots of stuff I wanted to talk about in this firefight vid that we didn't talk about at all.
Do you want to go over that?
Like, well, I mean, the first frame is, and it actually took me a while to tell. Like this very first frame, 5 seconds in, it looks so big. I thought it was a brute, and then I looked at the jaws, and I was like, no, it's an elite with a big hat. And the more I look at it, the more I'm still not sure what I'm looking at. Later on, there are some characters that are definitely brutes, no question. Although they look different as well.
Well, they tried to elitify them after a while, you know, because I think the initial introduction of the brutes wasn't quite handled well. And suddenly when the elites were gone and we were only facing the brutes, they didn't play or act or were as fun to fight, I think. So I think Bungie is kind of a band-aid action set. Okay, we'll make the brutes look like the elites. Yeah, that'll do it. So we'll give them all the same blue armor, this big headdresses and things like that.
And then what we've got, we've got Rocket Pack Grunts.
Yep.
And
yep,
EVA elites. I have to admit, they look pretty cool. That's a nice improvement over Halo 2.
Yeah,
those
I like
are,
the helmets.
Those are really
those
snazzy.
Guys, they look very stormtrooperish.
Yeah.
You know? In fact, there's a grunt that looks very very modern. And
I also noted
too,
there's this other kind of a larger Covenant drop pad that has a shield door on it that comes down, and a bunch of brutes get out. And the first thing one brute does is shoot the guy in front of him in the back.
They shoot themselves. Yeah.
So
yeah. Way
AI,
to go.
AI improvements.
Our AI
guys.
Is so much smarter
AI
than before. I love the jackal stab in the throat. I can't wait for them to get, you know, angry calls from mothers
and
on that one when their 8-year-old starts
doing that.
We're
seeing players use their loadouts, use their abilities in here, as well as assassinations. So we've obviously got the full, you know, the full campaign experience in terms of loadouts and abilities, armor abilities.
At the 24 second mark or the 23 second mark, are we seeing there the grunt?
Yeah.
Like if you shoot a grunt's tank, they go flying? Is that what we're seeing there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you notice that. I've seen that a couple of times, actually. Yeah, when the tank goes, they suddenly fly off through the air like Superman for a while and explode, I guess. I guess that's a comical bit. Here's one thing I don't know if you noticed. It's subtle, but I don't know what? If I like it. If you go to 20
yeah, it's
to
the
21,
hunter, right?
The hunter. What do you
his
notice
face,
is different about
it,
him?
It looks as if they're exposing a lot more vulnerable spot in the face area there. Like
and what else? What's the big thing though?
I don't know. That was kind of the big thing that I noticed.
Well, it's a one-shot kill.
No. No, it's not that. Think a little simpler. You can see that he has eyes. Never before in any of the hunters could you actually see whether or not they had eyes. All you saw was this big metal helmet thing covering their head, and you couldn't see anything. And like the original Alien design in 79, you never saw the alien's eyes, and it was creepy. It scared you. I think the other hunters are scary. I think this one kind of looks like a wuss now. One, because
well,
now
exactly.
His chin's
that's
hanging out.
That's why.
But two, now he's got eyes. He looks like every other creature around. And I don't know.
I'm trying
if
to,
I like
you know, I
it
think if you look close enough,
scarier before when you couldn't see
I think
what he
in
was
Halo
looking
3,
at.
If you look close enough, they have eyes. I'll have to go back and look.
But I never
but the,
noticed it
the
before,
big
so
thing to me
just,
is that I think they're.
But...
I think they recognize that what they did over the series, you know, was that with in Halo 1 where. You know, they were very armored except on a couple of spots, and once you got access to those spots, they were really easy, you know, to kill. I mean, they looked
right, but then the trick was
yeah,
never
they,
getting
they
you
looked
that close.
Really, really dangerous, but they, you know, once you knew how to do it, sidestepping was really, really easy. And for some people, it was enough that they look scary, and for other people, once the gameplay problem was solved. You know, hunters ceased to be interesting for them. And so in the next few games, obviously they made hunters a lot tougher. They changed the weapons and the way they worked. It became a lot harder to get that close, and there was no reason anymore once it was not a one-shot kill anymore. I wonder if the introduction of this much larger vulnerable spot in the face is kind of a return to the older style of gameplay, because it almost looks like this is the one-shot kill. I'm not sure what he's being hit with. It's certainly not a sniper round, by the look of it. I don't...
Well, it could be a sniper target area that they want to increase, because trying to get the thing with the sniper before, I think 99 times out of 100, you would end up chipping his helmet and boom, it would just bounce off and you couldn't hit him. So here it looks like you do hit him in the head and he's still taking damage. It doesn't look like... See, it looks like he's getting hit right in the helmet. And that is still enough to take him down. So maybe the armor isn't as effective, or maybe the weapon's different.
And this
here's one big thing though about firefight.
This HUD is really getting busy.
Yeah, full, isn't it?
Like what? I've got the usual motion detector on my left, and I've got an indicator of what my armor ability is.
With your armor ability,
at which second are you?
34 seconds.
This is 34
on the firefight, and then I've got my grenade type and grenade count.
Grenades
compass.
In the left. You got your
the
compass,
shield and the health.
Shield,
and I gotta admit, the health spreading out from the middle, I do not like that. I do not like it at all.
No, me neither.
I want a traditional bar that goes from left to right. I look at that. I cannot tell.
Thank you.
I cannot tell what's going on. No.
I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't know what I'm looking at. Is it a UV meter?
So then I've got my primary and secondary weapons with icon
with
counts,
icons and numbers and graphics.
And what's this? And then I've got the direction indicators for the generators and the strength indicators for the generators.
For each strength
game
level,
type
you have A,
and
B, and
the
C.
Game clock
playing. I'm assuming this is a play
and
icon
the,
of a
what's
video.
What's the weapon called? This is obviously the Hammer of Dawn,
that,
some kind of orbital strike thing.
Well, yeah, this is the new one, and then that was the big thing I was going to lead into. But yeah, airstrikes. You can now call in airstrikes with this weapon on either an individual, which is what he's doing right now. He's locking in an individual guy, saying, "Okay, I want an airstrike where this guy's at." Or you can do an area. You actually get this blue circle within a circle on the ground.
Yeah,
and yeah, and you move it around, and when you trigger it, yeah, you can call up to like two or three airstrikes depending on how many are in this particular weapon. But yeah, here's my question. What do you guys feel about airstrikes? I think on number 37 on the counter, you can actually see the circle area where he's calling it an airstrike and a bunch of grunts. What do you think about airstrikes in this? I'm sure it was very big in some of the other games.
I like
that have been out, especially the Call of Duty.
Somehow we
ones.
Can't ever escape bringing it up, but I like the equivalent in Gears of War. I think it was fun. It's one of those things where they restrict when and where and how often you can use it. And actually, I like what they did in Gears because they made it fit in pretty well with the fiction, such that you had to be outdoors with a clear view of the sky, and so you couldn't use it indoors, and you couldn't use it in these scenarios. And then they always had an excuse for having a technical problem that prevents you from using it in certain areas. So it's used in certain kind of preset sequences where there are enemies that are so big that you have to use this weapon. How these guys will integrate it, I don't know. Probably, limited ammunition, limited range.
I think the counter had either three or four on it, and you had to be with the laser designator had to be on the target for X amount of time, too. So whoever's using it, obviously the Covenant or anybody else on the map can see
you. You have to be able to see the area you're targeting, and you have to be in the open, exposed, for a certain minimum amount of time in order to use it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you could be in a door or under something at the, they're not quite clear on that. I'm sure we'll find out, but that may be how
they limit it, because that's how it works in Gears, right? Is that you can't use it in those areas. You can't use it indoors.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of bubble shield, the bubble shield, I guess they combined with the health regenerator. So now instead of the bubble shield, I guess they have it
right,
set up
as a healing
zone within it.
It's the medic loadout, and it's bubble shield plus the regenerator.
Right, so they seem to be kind of minimalizing and combining things as opposed to giving them separate equipment and stuff. So that's kind of interesting. I like the fact that the thing takes damage now, so when you actually, want to destroy it, or if it's weak enough, you actually could throw firepower at it and
knock it down.
That's,
I have to admit,
nice.
In Halo 3, those
impervious.
Two pieces of equipment were both pretty useless for both sides, because always what you could do is you could just wait it out. And in most cases, the way the AI was scripted, it really didn't matter. If a brute threw down a shield or a regenerator, you could just stay where you were and wait for it to expire.
Yeah, it's a delay.
Yeah, it was
tactic.
Just a delay.
That's all
tactic.
It did.
Now they were
it's high.
There were
I'm
some
stall.
Places where I'm thinking like in Crow's Nest, there were a couple of hallways where, down the range they would fire those off, but they would be brutes that would be coming to try and flank you. So there were some situations where you couldn't just wait it out, but they were pretty rare.
I just came to it would always be frustrating for me, because I'd be close to killing one of them and then he'd throw it down, and then I knew his shields were coming back up, so I could wait it out, but then I'm back to square one.
Yeah, so it's delay, and
so it was still hurting. It
sometimes
still
wasting your ammo. Yeah,
right. Yeah, like I'd be, oh man, I almost got him. Now I'm gonna have to charge in there and beat him to death or something. But not that was really hard. Thinking back to the way the brutes were, basically just charge them and punch them, and they would.
Now I'm also noticing the firefight. It looks, and I don't know, maybe they'll separate it by map, but we've seen brutes and we've seen elites, and I'm wondering, how are they gonna function? I mean, because they've always kind of fulfilled the same battlefield role. I wonder, maybe one wave will be elites and one wave will be brutes, so they won't be elites and brutes out at the same time, or.
Well, in the customization of it in Firefight, you can actually designate how many different enemies you want and whatever types. So if you want to set up an entire wave where you're only fighting grunts or only fighting elites or only fighting brutes, or if you want within certain expansions of the waves within the different sets, you can set up where, okay, I'm facing grunts here and then elites here and then brutes there.
How about all
on.
Hunters?
I believe you can set that up. I don't. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know what the limitations are as far as that specific, but I do know that you can customize it to the point where you can limit your risk on not only yourself, but also on the enemies that are approaching you, because it goes so far as to saying, okay, I want to only want to fight elites, but I also want to affect their hearing. I only want them to hear me within a certain range. I want their eyesight only so good. I only want them to see me at a certain distance. So there are certain things where you can actually customize them pretty extensively. Whether or not hunters or other creatures are included, I honestly don't know.
Did you notice if they have anything, because I still haven't seen like any of the customization screens, do they offer anything like an unlimited skill improvement? I think one thing that people got bored with within ODST is that after a while it just became the same.
Monotonous. Yeah, it just kept going.
If you got really good,
the difficulty curve plateaued, and that was it.
It just kind of flattened out. And I thought it would be nice if they kind of made it where you could for those particular super players, or not just super players, but super teams, because if you had a good enough team, you could really route through the enemies. But it would be nice if there was a way to say, you know what, let their skills exponentially increase.
Yes.
And
see how far they can really go.
And then that would be a true badge of, I got to level 10, wave, whatever.
Yeah. I do know that you can now limit wave sets and rounds. I do know that you can say, okay, I only want these rounds to be X amount of minutes. I know I only want to have 4 of them, and I only want to have 2 waves and whatnot. And that I remember, I can remember commenting in a podcast that we actually did, which I thought was really nice, where it would be nice to limit our risk. They've done it. So awesome job. We finally got something in here that we were hoping for, or at least from my perspective, I was. But as far as that goes, I don't know how far the difficulty curve will go within a single game. But I think that if you wanted to, you could say, okay, I want to do wave set and rounds within a certain range of difficulty and with a certain settings of enemies. And then for the next one, I'm going to up it and then go on to the next one. And then I'm going to up it even more. So theoretically, I think there is a maximum where, okay, I'm doing X amount of sets, X amount of rounds, and X amount of waves. But everyone is an expert at everything. Their vision and hearing is perfect. I'm dealing with the worst enemies at the worst possible time. And I think that is probably going to be the penultimate. And if players get through that, then yeah, for them, it will actually plateau. Or it could be so difficult, they only bother beating it once. But as far as the difficulty curve continuing to rise exponentially, that I don't know. Because theoretically, the AI is only so good anyway, so there's got to be a limit.
But there is that threshold where it becomes like God mode, where when the jackals take you down with one shot, or the sniper, so they could tweak things to where it's like where a brute has enough of a shockwave of his hammer, he can be 3 steps away from you and kill you without even touching you. You know what I mean? Like they could have those kind of like stupidly insane good skills on their side. But at least then it would say, you could then turn around and say, no, well, I was able to actually manage through one of those waves, and then, because we were right. So good.
As if there was,
so good. We were actually able to get through that. So
like there was something beyond legendary. I think what was it in the marathon series that was beyond legendary? Mythic. I think it was called.
Mythic.
Okay, so say there was a mythic level, and then beyond the mythic, there was godlike, and then beyond that, there was like titan-like. So it would be nice if there was a progression that allowed you to do that and say, okay, we're going beyond the normal 4-level range we usually do, between novice and expert, but now we're going, balls to the walls, insane as far as everything goes. Yeah, I guess that would be kind of nice. Mm. And again, since we don't have anything yet, there's nothing really to compare it to. We're only going by videos here. But I do see an extensive amount of customization, much more than anything that we've seen before. So I think this upgrade to 2.0, as they're calling it, Firefight 2.0, is huge. So the question now comes, is like, okay, now we've got all these customizations. A, how easy are they to use? B, how much are we going to want to customize stuff to set things up to play and see what's the replayability going to be? And I think it's going to be pretty good for all 3 of them, to tell you the truth. The question is, are there any annoyances or anything that we don't even know about yet that are still going to be there that are going to ruin it or annoy us enough to make us stop playing. Mm-hmm. That's the real question. Is there some other thing niddling bit in there? It's like, oh, they did so good, but... And the question is how big is that going to be, whether it's going to, you know, keep that replayability up. The whole thing on matchmaking, too, they talked about a lot of different advances or changes with that. And now with Firefight, you can do matchmaking. That's going to be a big thing. So sitting around and saying, okay, yeah, I don't want to do campaign and I don't want to do multiplayer. I want to do some Firefight. But if I'm getting random people in there, you know, you end up into that matchmaking problem of getting the, you know, textbook annoying gamer griefing your time and ruining your
experience.
There's
going to have to be an aggressive system for penalizing players who team kill, either booting them out of the game or doing something else. Because I can see plenty of people thinking the funniest thing to do is to go into a firefight game and kill other Spartans.
Yeah, or airstrike people, everyone in the corner as soon as they're about to win or as soon as they're about to do something. Yeah, I totally see that happening. And to be honest, the only solution I can possibly come up is, guess what? No team killing. Mm-hmm. It's the simplest thing in the world to do. It prevents idiots.
Friendly fire?
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. I would love friendly fire to be gone. And for all the realism...
I know that's one of your big bugaboos...
Blackstar, the yeah. I'm sorry, I hate it, and people are not disciplined. In fact, some of the videos I was watching, I'll point it out to you. I think Lars was bouncing around on the beach. He's spraying his own teammates while he's going after these elites. People don't have the discipline.
It's not going
to
help, though.
Do it. What do you mean
that's
it's not going to help?
That's not going to help.
If they can't kill me, that's all I want.
There will be more people who will do it, because if you can't kill people and the game doesn't punish you for doing it, there will be players who go in and just throw all of their ammunition at you and will just be think it's funny to see the explosions. And since it won't hurt you, they'll say, "Hey, you have no reason to get upset. I'm not actually killing you."
Oh, they
won't
do
be
that
participate.
Anyway.
They won't be playing the game right. They won't be participating in it. It's not going to be.
Yeah, but see, those people are going to be that way anyway. Those people are going to be that way anyway. But if I'm not dying every 2 seconds from my own guy, that's the annoyance I'm worried about. That's the one interrupting my gameplay.
I think actually it'll just encourage more people to do it. So yes, it'll be a less annoying situation that occurs far more.
You won't
often.
Be dying, but you'll be getting, you know, nicked and paused.
You'll be killed by Covenant because the scenario requires at least 2 to 4 people.
You can't you know, regulate morons. I mean, there's no way around it.
The answer I gave when people say, why doesn't Firefight have matchmaking? And the answer I gave was because Bungie knows that won't work. So I'll give them credit for ambition here. I think they think they figured out a way to make it work. They didn't. I think it's interesting that there was not any Firefight mode in the beta.
And aren't they saying this is the one where you can jump in? You know, while the firefight's in progress, right?
I don't
supposedly.
Know.
Yeah, I think
so. So theoretically, the potential griefers could also be booted out of it too.
Right.
So, but see, the thing is not dying and losing points and equipment and people and whatever else. Them acting stupid and idiotic is slightly disruptive, but it's not game ending.
Well, I mean, I would make the game open to my friends list only. First off.
Right.
And,
assuming your friends aren't having a bad day.
Right.
But yeah.
Still,
but,
I mean,
but the
for
major
me,
solution
that's
99% to prevent
of it. So.
Yeah, but that's right. But that's a custom. You can't set that in matchmaking. You can't go into a matchmaking playlist and say, "I only want people on my team." On
oh,
my
right,
playlist.
Right, right. No, yes.
You can make a party first, yeah. But
no, I was talking about the mechanic of being able to jump in at like any time, and I would like having a 30-minute fight. Custom, you know, with my buddies, I would love it if I, you know, a friend of mine could just jump in
and leave it open so that somebody could come on and see you and then jump in.
I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Here's a question I have then: if the certain parameters that they've actually set up for matchmaking to help the funneling of people that you do want to play with, you know, they've added parameters in for chattiness and goals, whether you're looking for winning oriented or just out for fun, things like that. Why couldn't they set up a parameter as far as how feedback goes and people on your friends list first in there. You know, that seems like something simple, whereas, you know, if you had a preference as far as going out to someone in Saskatchewan as opposed to someone in your friends list, why couldn't they set up that is at least part of a criteria that you could add in matchmaking?
Well, I guess only, you know what I mean? For concerns about leveling and, you know, trying to cheat the system, I suppose.
Well, in the matchmaking, there's still that random element. You're still going to get people, but right. Getting a certain class of people.
Or maybe, you know, or maybe that could be limited. Had
positive feedback.
Or maybe those kind of features could be only enabled in the playlists which are not ranked. The social playlists.
Maybe.
And then I could
see
that. Well,
see, I only do social now anyways.
That'd be kind of neat. So I think that would take care of those issues where folks are simply waiting around. Right. Trying to play, and so maybe that, you know, you would just kind of say, you know, just a match, you know, match me up with other friends, or maybe as far as friends of friends, which would be kind of neat too.
Because I mean, they have language, which I'm assuming they're limiting by country.
Firefight is a mode where there's always scoring on. Is there a point in having a social firefight list?
Sure. Only for the people. Only for the one person who sticks it out all the way through. I mean, you know, then you know, he could be playing for the scoring, and I could just be jumping in because I have 10 minutes, and I haven't played with you
right.
in like a while. It'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, just coming in to say hi.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know,
but yeah, but there are times when your goals are you know, different than what, you know, Bungie's are for particular achievements or things like that. Where I can remember games that you and I played, we wanted like 1 million points or 2 million points or whatever.
Right.
I think different types and different levels where they said, okay, let's goof around and have only grunts and have them all experts, but we'll have a million of them. You know, something like that to give you, you know, this giant wave of living bodies coming at you, you know, for comedic value. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of different ways that you could act goofy and would want to share that socially because it's fun.
That'd be kind of neat if it was the flying grunts and there was a map.
Yeah.
And there was a map with that had like a basin of like water. And
it's funny, because I was thinking it's like the opening of Saving Private Ryan, but instead of, you know, the Germans, you know, having big grunts coming.
Well, I'm trying to link it up with like myth. So like when you would chuck when the dwarf would chuck his bottles into the water until you got like, you know, 500 bottles in there, and then you'd finally throw like a satchel leading from the water. And blow it up, and you would see the physics of this thing, you know. So imagine you have like a, you know, 500 grunts with their methane tanks,
ground wave,
just all piling up, and then you finally take a rocket launcher to it, and you see all the
airstrike. Yeah. Actually, I'm curious because it says you can target individuals. I'm wondering, in an airstrike, can you actually target vehicles? And if so, if say you were targeting the ground directly under a land point from a Phantom. Could you actually nail the Phantom with the airstrike?
Doesn't it? I mean, isn't there a Phantom landing there just as he's doing that?
Yeah, you sort of see it, but you don't see the airstrike pummeling the vehicle. That's the thing. It's right under it. Oh, wait a minute. You do have a hit. Yeah, see, there's one hit, but then a second later, there's a hit to the side, to the ground. So you know what I mean? It's not really being targeted. It just got in the way.
It gets hit twice. That Phantom gets hit twice.
Does it? I only saw one.
33 seconds.
All right, let me go. Let me see that.
And 35 seconds.
Oh, okay. See, I'm looking at 13 and 14.
And then he backs away. You can't see it. And then they switch. They switch to another shot.
Okay, because 13 and 14.
He selects a target under the Phantom, and two of the strikes end up hitting the Phantom.
Right.
In fact, the target does not get hit, actually.
Yeah, so more. I mean, would we want to be able to target a Phantom? I mean, I think it's kind of nicer this way.
Oh, Nark, I know, wants to target him. You kidding? Every time we play, it's like, get the Phantom.
Right.
I gotta get the Phantom. The Phantom.
I still say the Phantoms are the best addition to the game in a long time, specifically just because of the way of behave. It's the only enemy that's ever put there without making it almost mandatory or expected for you to kill them, because they're the only ones that have any real sense of self-preservation. They're there to do the job. They want to come in and they want to drop these characters off and they want to leave. And you've got only a limited window to get them. And you know they can get away.
They also blow
I would say
up
like
real
for
pretty.
Instance, Oh, that's true too.
That's what I love about
that. That's why Narc likes it.
That's why I like it. Because, you know, if I got me and three buddies and we all got fuel rod guns, it was the most beautiful thing to be able to destroy them before they dropped off their
Right. Think about it. It's one of the only ways in this series that you can really have in a campaign playthrough where you can really feel you accomplished something that's out of the ordinary at all. Because you're supposed to be able to kill every other enemy. You can speed run past them in lots of areas if you really want, but it's an expected and normal thing for you to be able to eliminate all the other enemies. And that's the only one where you can have one playthrough where you get him and you have another playthrough where it gets away and you're like, oh darn, I missed it. You know, I'll have to get that next guy.
Well, it's funny. I'm sitting here going through a couple different things and I know exactly what you mean. I mean, I remember the first time I took down a Scarab for the first time and it was absolutely blown away by the epicness of it. And yet all recursory ones after that, you kind of don't get the same feeling simply because they just kind of sit there and spin.
The Scarab is sitting there waiting for you to destroy it.
Right. So, and it will always be there. It's not going away. It's not going to something. You don't have to stop it.
It has no purpose to be there other than to be destroyed by you.
Yep. So
it's not doing anything else.
So phantoms are actually, there's a greater sense of accomplishment. Take a look at, when you guys get a sec, take a look at second 51, and it's kind of hard to see, but if you scroll up and down in the middle of it, this grunt who looks like he's, you know, something from
I was just thinking grunt looks huge.
Yeah. He looks, not only is he big, but he also looks like something from Aperture Science.
Fifty-one seconds.
Grunt assassination.
Okay. Yeah. Now the assassination, which is rather gruesome, cycle up frame by frame. You will actually see him stab him in the eye, and his body is writhing around. Suddenly goes limp, where you know he's dead. But slowly go up frame by frame, and you'll actually see the body fall down. But you actually see an error here where his head falls into his own chest.
He recoils like a spring and his head collides and collapses into his chest.
Yeah, I'm wondering if anybody noticed the collision fault with that because they released it anyway. But yeah, notice the big giant pack that he's carrying?
Well, that's methane.
That thing is friggin' huge.
Yeah, that's the explodey part now.
Well, I think this is the rocket guy because he's wearing the space suit. I think he's the space guy, so I think he flies around. But yeah, no, I found it fascinating.
There's
very
bigger
gruesome
error
assassination.
Than that. I mean, when that scene starts, the assassination animation is already underway.
Yeah,
and the grunt's hands are empty, and then. Yep. As the death proceeds, his hands fall to his sides, and out of nowhere, at 52 seconds, a plasma pistol materializes in the middle of the air to fall to the ground.
I thought that was like other in some of the other games. Every enemy is carrying a weapon somewhere.
Yeah, but it is kind of weird
watching this rather smooth
animation, and all of a sudden this just pops.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he had to have been carrying that somewhere, and the game has to drop it for you to be able to pick up, and it just looks odd the way it does.
I remember when you would pop an elite that was carrying a sword, he'd also drop like a plasma rifle or something. It would just kind of it would always be somewhere on his body.
Oh, that's a gruesome assassination! I mean, right in the eye. It's like, oh, geez.
Actually, I would want to bring that up. When we talk about the campaign video, because the assassination in the campaign video also has something that I thought was a little bit, I don't know, I'm not sure if I'd go so far as to call it out of character. It's that moment where you come up on the elite.
Wait, and jump on his head?
Yeah, he's just thrown the Marine against the wall and you sprint up to his back and they do the animation. But then there's a voice at 5 minutes even. There's a female voice with what sounds like a Russian accent.
Yeah, I think it's Kat or someone. Yeah,
yeah,
she
I
says,
assume it's the
says,
one-armed lady's
excellent
partner.
Excellent or awesome or something.
She says beautiful. What beautiful. I thought was beautiful, which I just thought was just a weird, I mean.
Beautiful.
I thought it was coming. Oh, I couldn't tell if it was coming in from his helmet or in
the PA system. Or...
I think it's supposed to be a player who's behind you. I can't really tell. I don't think – I mean, it's not like a Cortana in your voice or over the radio type of sound. So I assume –
Well, it could have been one of the Marines in front of him because there's two in front of you right there.
Could be.
And that is nice how they walk backwards. I think that's showing kind of that military, you know, they're serious now. They're not going to simply turn around, you know.
None of that showing the back thing.
But the thing I wanted to bring up is that if you go back to the first game, right, Halo has been a fairly serious story that's had a certain amount of humor mixed in. And a lot of the humor was this kind of over-the-top, enthusiastic military combat dialogue, you know, the things that Sergeant Johnson says and all the accolades that the play, you know, that the other Marines give you for, you know, having a nice shot or stealing my kill, you know, always kind of lighthearted. I mean, it's a serious thing going on, all of this, you know, all of this death and carnage. But it was always kept light. They've talked about, you know, I guess everybody wants to be darker and grittier now, right? And this is looks like a darker, grittier story.
Thank you, Chris Nolan.
But that's what I was, all this blood and the bodies. And
Know it's not going to end well. But at the same time, to me, there seemed something very un-Halo-like being congratulated with the word beautiful for knifing us. An elite in the back. I don't know why that is. It struck me as slightly out of.
It's a little too big on the nose. Whereas Cortana's commentary would not be so much congratulatory. Kind of more like, "What are you doing?" You know, where, you know, like, "Hey, that there are two of us in here," and that kind of was a bit of a twist. Whereas this is really like, more like, "Hey, you know, good shot," which is what you expect the Marines to say, but. But they were typically.
That's why I thought it was the Marine in front of you.
Yeah, but that was typically why it was okay, because the Marines are kind of like, you know, goofballs who are bullet sponges.
Yeah, but
you know, so.
the Marines are congratulating you on effectively doing your job and not on having done it, not how it was done, and certainly not using a word like beautiful to describe. A violent action. I mean, it's almost like to me if Cortana was to joke at you saying, "Wow, I didn't know those guys had that much blood in them." You know, I mean, it's a little too. I don't know.
Sarge
something
would say,
about
like,
that
shot. And...
Well, yeah, but it's all very
I know
very,
what the ladies
very
like.
Surface, very you know, very tongue in cheek, and you know,
you want some
and,
more?
And,
you want a
and
piece
the Master
of me?
Chief was always you know very stoic and very businesslike. You really got the sense that. This was his job. He's good at his job, and he does it. It's not a Marcus Fenix Gears of War reveling in the carnage and the blood and guts.
So maybe it's the way it's being said that could be part of
it. Is
yeah, right.
It is
because if it was said that a bit more tongue in cheek, like the way one of the other sergeants says, "Hey, beautiful," you know, like maybe that would have been enough to not make it quite
so it's
dark. But the fact that she's
it's the
got
tone.
That
the tonality
sort of,
has been changed.
It feels to me like she's channeling, and it's funny that you bring up Christopher Nolan for dark and edgy because I was thinking it sounds to me like she's channeling not Heath Ledger's Joker, but Jack Nicholson's Joker. You know when he's saying you know the bodies. You know
I don't know if it's art.
I don't know if it's
like
art,
it.
But I like it. You know there's this tone of like wow I really love the way you knife that guy in the eye that just seems to me very kind of not what we're used to hearing from Halo characters.
I love to see a pro work.
It's a kind of a thing I expect from Gears, you know, a game where you hold up dead bodies to protect yourself from bullets, and you routinely chainsaw through skulls.
I knew there's a reason I didn't play that game.
Yeah, I would say that the tone of that delivery there,
right,
is creepy. It's because you're not sure who says it or what's going on, but it just seems creepy for that moment.
Hopefully she'll die soon in the game. So we don't have to...
Well, can that happen? I mean, do we...
I think we touched on that in a different level. It would, in your ongoing, like, there's no penalty. It would be good, I think, if as the game starts to end, people fall off, you know? They're just, sorry, you know, they're done.
that they could build that into the narrative structure. Like, for instance, they could make it there are certain levels in which certain characters die in cutscenes, but people I think will object to that if they don't have a chance to save them. But if you build it into the gameplay where it's just like, you know, at certain times or at any time, it may be possible for some of your your accompanying characters to die, then to some extent it makes the whole game into an escort mission. And we know how people love escort missions.
Right. No. I mean, I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking like that there might be key moments, just like you're saying at the first part, that key moments where you're given a chance to lose a character, you know?
Yeah.
I think that would be quite, I would applaud that because I think that would be a good way.
I would applaud them trying it. I think it works. I think it works better and stuff. I think I brought this up last time, based on what Mass Effect 2 did. But in an RPG, when you have these decisions where you know you're assigning personnel to certain jobs, and that's what that's really what causes the effect, right? Because in Mass Effect 2, it's not really so much your execution of the combat missions that affects whether people live or die. It's the management decisions you make in terms of who you're going to assign to what task. And there's, I think, at least two rounds of choosing for these various different tasks, and depending on who you choose, and depending on your past interactions with that character that determine whether or not there's a chance that they will die, so that you can actually have, you know, a range of outcomes all the way from everybody dies all the way up to everybody lives, depending on one, what your interactions were with each character prior to the end, and two, the choices you make in assigning people to jobs.
But at the end of the game, at least so far, it's understood that everyone dies. So no matter what happens, you're saving them.
Well, I don't know. But the characters in ODST survived Reach, so we know that
some of
the planet is lost.
Right.
But is there any particular reason? Well, other than the fact that Spartans never die, they only go MIA. So presumably, the Master Chief is the only Spartan who leaves Reach.
I'm sorry, that was a cheesy line.
But even in the novels, that's not true, right? Aren't the other Spartans that are in the novels? Weren't they also from Reach, from two of the Master Chief's teams that were on Reach?
I'd have to go read them again, but yeah, I think some of them, or at least some of the storyline follows that.
So, I mean, it depends on which wave again of Spartans that we're talking about. Some of them,
yeah.
to be honest, the original Spartans, and then the second and third level or versions.
It's funny, they don't seem to want to really touch on that, because somebody actually asked in one of the interview videos whether the Master Chief was going to make a cameo. And the guy seemed like, we should have thought of that. It seemed almost as if he was trying to backpedal a little bit. And he said, well, we're focusing on these people and this particular story and blah, blah, blah. So I don't think that they're actually going to do any tie-ins with the Master Chief. I could totally be wrong. Personally, I would love to see it. In fact, the ending, I think, you know, would be an awesome lead into that, where you've got to let, you know, whatever you are doing allows the Master Chief to escape. I think that would be kind of cool,
yeah.
And you sacrifice yourself
like
for
that.
Him. That seems like a pretty cool ending. But then again, you know, we're all going to see that, you know, come September. But as far as the dynamic and how your choices affect the outcome, Halo has never been one to allow consequences to be a big factor in your gameplay, regardless of what aspect of it. It's been pretty linear.
Which is what makes it so compelling, because to me,
right,
these teammates which you're playing with are really nothing more than enhanced the Marines. So
yeah, enhanced Marines.
So this is no different.
Well,
trying to get to the final level with five the soldiers with rockets and so on. So I don't see it as being so complicated. I would just imagine that up until certain levels, they can't die, just like in the mechanic used in the previous games, where they would just get knocked out, and then they would wake up after a few minutes. But that there would come later on some points when they finally, you know, whether it's hinted through music or through some sort of way for you to know, okay, not now.
A quick time event.
The fail safes are turned off, and now this is going to be the real deal here. And that, again, to me, extends the playability of the game, because now I could say, okay, I made it first time I play, I lost most of them and only kept a few, which they make it easy to keep. And then when I play it again on Legendary, the challenge is to keep most of them alive all the way through, even though maybe at the very end, again, the final cutscene is that most of us die or we sacrifice ourselves to save John or something, you know.
Kind of like Truth and Reconciliation, right? Where you start, you know, depending on how you play through, they give you some replacement Marines,
right?
And then there's that bloodbath in the grav lift room,
in the hangar, yeah.
You know, you could lose a lot of Marines, and you'll get them back maybe a little bit later when they do the reinforcements.
Right.
But certainly, it's more difficult to play through that area if you don't have any support. Mm-hmm. And you have to really take out those sword guys pretty quickly if you want any Marines to survive that room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's where comboing comes in. Now, here's my question. They've been talking about this whole sandbox aspect, and I don't know whether they're just kind of throwing that phrase around, you know, like a ping pong ball, you know, without a net. But the question is what, A, how close is that to a real sandbox? Or B, are they trying to add more randomness in it in progressing from level to level by giving you more of a range to go to? Because they kept talking about exploratory and stuff. And every time they say sandbox, I think of GTA. And,
I think when Bungie says sandbox, what they really mean is toy box. What they mean is that you've got this group of enemies and this group of weapons and these structures in an environment. And what they mean by sandbox is that we're not going to script this so that every enemy always does the same thing every time and plays it out linearly. What it means is that we're going to throw a bunch of enemies and a bunch of weapons into an area, and since the enemies will react to the player and the player reacts to the enemy, the way the battles actually play out every time should be different. It shouldn't be the same every time. But it's not a kind of like go anywhere at any time and do anything.
Right, exactly. So that's why I think that was a bad description. And I think that's going to come back to the same way that some of the other descriptions that they had about ODST and the whole first and the whole first expansion pack comment, you know, especially when people were talking about how much it was worth and stuff. But the other question I had is because one video I did watch, they talked about where now you have the option of choosing a male or a female Marine as your character, but also every added armor adjustment or color change that you make to your character, apparently, the customization of it will show up in the actual game and in the cutscenes. Now, is this going to be changing the story that much if you are a female Marine, or should I say a female Noble Six? I was just curious as to, because of all the cutscenes that we've seen, it's been the male Noble
Six
guy.
They never take those
suits
off.
No, never. So they must be getting quite ripe by now. But yeah, see, the other thing is I almost had a half thought in the back of my mind. What if Noble Six is the chief? Da-da-da-da.
Also add that the what would you call it, the body animations are much improved.
Motion capture, I think, is what they talk about.
The
character
motions,
animations or motion capture.
The motion capture
is
really paying off. I don't know. I was very impressed with it. The way that even when they land at the very start. I mean, is that what they're going to look like? At other points, like when they're, it just looked very smooth. I thought looked very slick. It really immersed me into the, you know, it got me charged because I felt like, okay, I got to be really careful here because everyone else is being really careful. And I thought that was really
impressive.
Yeah, the
only thing that bugged me was there was still some occasional texture popping. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. I'm hoping this is just beta-ness. Serious. There's no reason to have them.
I wonder if that shows up in the official trailer itself.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
The videos I looked at, there was actually a couple of motions where Sierra 259, his left leg seemed to have this weird popping out random action sometimes when he would run. It was kind of weird. I don't know if you guys had noticed that, but if you get a chance in playing the videos again.
Which one is Sierra?
259. He's your leader there, the blue guy.
The dark blue. Okay.
He's the dark blue male leader.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any texture popping, at least not on this first run at the beginning there. Everything looks pretty
slick. I saw it when you got into the saber.
The saber. Okay, so that's later on. Okay.
Yeah. I saw it at the Saber at some point, and you know, just randomly, it wasn't huge. It certainly wasn't Halo 2 huge. And it wasn't like a big scene or anything. It was just like an item, but it did distract your eye for a second. It's like noticing something move, and when you look at it real quick, you don't see, you know, you don't know what moved.
Okay, well, that will about wrap it up for this extended episode of Anger, Sadness, and Envy. Here we included most of the material that was cut out of our recent look at E3 and the firefight and campaign video demonstrations for Halo Reach. Next episode, we'll be talking about the remake of Blood Gulch and other Reach news. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.